This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We've got SEPTA CEO and General Manager Leslie Richards coming up later. They released their new budget yesterday, and there's a big funding shortfall ahead. What will that mean for writers and the services we all rely on? We're going to ask Leslie Richards about that, and we want to hear what changes you would like to see. What do you think is working? What's not? Call us and weigh in. That number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And that's two like the number. We look forward to hearing from you.
We're actually already starting to hear from some folks. I think it's going to be a hot topic today.
Yes.
And then later in the hour after that conversation, we've got our first ever live Studio 2 trivia challenge. We're putting a listener in the hot seat. We're looking forward to that end of the hour today.
Well, now for our news roundup. And you probably heard about this. Some unruly teenagers took over a section of Center City last night near the Fashion District. It caused a big ruckus. The early reports was that a number of teens, that number was in the hundreds. The police called it a flash mob. It apparently started from a large fight inside the Fashion District. Police were called before 7 p.m. They moved everybody outside. And that's when things got chaotic. I mean, people said that rocks were thrown and that property was damaged, that people were arrested. But Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Ellie Rushing tweeted today that the police updated that report. No one was arrested. Four teens were issued street citations. There were no rocks thrown. No property was damaged. And an officer did twist his ankle while chasing somebody. But of course, all of this came literally the day after the city just rolled out its plan for youth and kids for the summer.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, the incident got the attention of the mayor, who tweeted out that it was destructive and disruptive and said, quote, this dangerous behavior will not be tolerated. So it got a lot of attention. The updated report certainly makes it sound a bit different than some of the initial incident reports, which is a lesson, I think, for all of us.
Yes, for sure. And hopefully people will check out the city's website. It's a summer thing about the summer jobs, camps, sports, pools, all the programs to keep young people occupied. And there's a lot of jobs and they pay pretty well.
Absolutely.
If you have a teenager.
All right. Let's switch it up. Going down to Delaware now, Cherry. Interesting article by our own Chris Barish this morning on WHYY.org. You should check it out, by the way. It's all about this fight over a potential new regulation in Delaware. This is what the regulation would do. It would make it so that all vehicles delivered to auto dealers in Delaware would have to be electric vehicles by the year 2035. This would happen in stages. It would be 35% of all cars starting in 2026, and then it would step up. This is modeled exactly off of a rule that California has already passed. New Jersey and Maryland have similar rules already in place, so Delaware potentially going to join this. One thing I find very interesting about it does not require legislation. This would be a rule put in place by Delaware's top environmental official, Sean Garvin. Garvin is expected to make a decision on this by early summer, and it's generating a lot of conversation in the first state.
Yeah, and this, of course, is modeled off of a similar rule passed in California last year. And Avi and I, you were talking earlier, one of the things that you mentioned is that people could just go across the state line to Pennsylvania and buy their cars if they don't want to.
And that would be true in New Jersey and Maryland as well.
Everywhere.
Because Pennsylvania would be the lone state in this region that would not have that rule. So, of course, you do wonder a little bit about the effectiveness of it. And, of course, anytime you use the word mandate, there's always backlash. And there is backlash, indeed, this potential mandate in Delaware. But, of course, you know, there's an environmental impact here. A lot of people want to see a quick switch to all electric.
And speaking of the environment, we're going to shoot on up the road to New Jersey and talk about whales. This is a big topic. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says that New Jersey wind farming may affect marine life. And people who know me, you know, I'm not the biggest environmentalist, but one thing that got my attention was the dozens of whales that have washed up along the East Coast since the beginning of December. I mean, in the last 4 months, there's been about 30 known deaths. It's disturbing for people to see these huge animals, seemingly one after another, washing up on the beach. People want some conclusions. And so, you know, at this point, they say healthy marine life populations, it could cause some issues. It's not exactly clear whether or not there's a connection to the deaths, but it could have some adverse effects. And I know that this will likely spark further investigation.
Right. So what's important here is that NOAA has acknowledged a potential effect on marine life. It has not said, and let's be clear, it has not said, and I know you said this, but I just want to make sure people understand, it has not said that the wind farm activity, and what we're talking about is basically the technology used to map out and create the wind farms off the coast of New Jersey, it has not said that that activity is leading to the whale deaths. Maybe they will get there at some point, but they just haven't said that
yet. Yeah, and a lot of people are nervous, I know, because these it's a very striking photo when you see this. It's very scary, but they're on it, and an investigation is ongoing. There you go.
Okay, let's transition to another story about striking images. Okay. Ever found anything valuable in your attic, your basement, Cherry?
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while?
Yeah.
Little antiques roadshow flavor. Okay, well, the Philadelphia Museum of Art is having one of those moments. They have this painting in storage. It's called Lady with a Guitar. Always hard to do art on the radio, but this one's easy. It's a picture of a lady with a guitar.
Literally.
Yes, that's literally what it is. It's been sitting in storage because it was thought to be a copy of a painting by the Dutch master Vermeer. It was thought to be a copy of a picture in London called The Guitar Player. Well, there is an art expert, a Vermeer expert, who thinks that it actually may be a Vermeer. And that is important because there are only 37 surviving paintings by this great Dutch master. This was first reported in the Art newspaper. I'm not saying a generic The Art newspaper. That's what it's called. The Art newspaper had this scoop about the expert who thinks and said at a symposium in Amsterdam recently that this might be the real thing. This thing just sitting in storage at the PMA might in fact be a very valuable piece of art.
And the art world is very political. You know, you have people have to be convinced that this is true. And the reason why it wasn't really looked at as, you know, an original was because it's in pretty poor condition. The canvas is torn, it's decaying on the surface. And so folks were unsure. I will mention that the Philadelphia Museum's the art director there, Sasha Suda, has commented that the future of the lady with a guitar will be used to inspire discussion. So we're gonna hear a lot more about this. Also, embracing scholarship.
It's already inspiring discussion.
Yeah,
doing its
we're
job.
Talking about it right now. Exactly.
Yeah. I do think it's fascinating that there's a lot of mystery in the art world, like, you know, around authenticity, who did it, who didn't do it. There's a lot
who
of thieving
it?
And there's a lot of imitation. There's a lot of intrigue in the art world. And it's just crazy to me that this was just sitting there in storage for years and years and years. And no one really thought anything of it. Anyways.
We get to talk football now. The Phil's home opener.
Baseball. We're talking baseball.
Oh, so what did I say? Yes, baseball.
We're not there
baseball,
yet.
Look.
Don't
me
skip
and sports.
The summer. Don't skip the summer.
Me and sports, okay? The Phil's home opener is postponed until tomorrow because of the weather. It's always a blast. Food, fun, and a ton to see once the ballpark opens for the season. Food is one of my favorite parts of attending baseball in person. Mm-hmm. We already had discussions about that. And our friend Billy Penn, food and drink reporter Ali Mohsen, had the tough job of tasting. You did the taste test?
I did the taste test.
You know, we're jelly over here. And it's going to tell us about everything new that Citizens Bank Park has to offer. Avi, you know, I know baseball's your thing, so and food is our thing.
Yeah.
So there you go.
This is common ground. First of all, welcome, Ali.
Hi.
So glad to have you on studio too. So you got to taste some of the new food.
I did.
That's coming to the park this year. What tickled your taste buds?
So there was a cheesesteak, Uncle Charlie's cheesesteaks, named for Charlie Manuel.
Yeah. Former Phillies manager Charlie Manuel.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. And that was pretty good. That was obviously one of the more prominent items. They've named a whole new stand after him, Uncle Charlie. And I think that was one of the highlights for me. It was a good steak. It was good.
Solid steak. Talk about the deliciousness of it.
Yeah, so they, executive chef from Aramark, Vani, described it as like a lot of research had gone into it.
Yeah.
They talked specifically about the type of roll that they developed for it, the type of onions, importantly diced.
They developed a roll.
These are diced
onions. Yeah, Lucio's roll specifically made for this cheesesteak. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was delicious. It was steak, it was cheese, yeah. and it was diced onions.
I'm sold.
Special yep. roll.
Cooper yeah. Sharp.
And I understand there's some, you know, there's a plant-based stand now to make, you know, eating at the ballpark more inclusive here?
Yeah, that is the big news. It's the first vegan permanent, we'll see, but resident.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's been a long time coming for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Obviously, whether it's a matter of preference or dietary restrictions. But I did notice online, and even when we announced it on Billy Penn's Twitter, immediately we got a response. Someone being, it's not going to last. Some people online, I guess purists, yeah. argue that it's not ballpark food. But, you know, at this point, what is ballpark food? It's not ham and cheese sandwiches anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
so true.
It's evolved.
Well, on that point, because when I first started going to baseball games, and I used to go to games in Baltimore in the 90s, it was a big deal that they had something called curly fries.
Mm. Yeah.
Like that was legitimately a big deal that they had spiced curly French fries
and now,
crab cakes. And now it's so elevated now. Like when I'm looking at your piece, there's a lot of gourmet food on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do have disco fries.
And you have disco.
And you yes. got to break that down for folks. I'm a French fry connoisseur. Yeah. So, you know, to explain to people what a disco fry is.
The disco, the South Philly disco fries from Pass and Stowe, which is the family-friendly pub. And it's a substantial meal. You know, it's
what's on there?
The roast pork, melted sharp provolone cheese, broccoli raw, roasted red peppers, and somewhere under there, fries.
So expect to get a little dribble of something on your Philly.
Yeah,
jersey.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that was, I mean, at the preview, obviously everything was served on paper plates. I don't know how it's going to be served at the game, but yeah, I'm assuming it's a substantial portion.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds good. I actually would go for that.
Yeah.
But personally, I would go for
disco fries.
I totally
would as well, and I wouldn't even care about the dribble on the on the clothing.
But to your point about the gourmet food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now there's couscous, for example.
Which blows my mind.
Yeah.
And how do you eat couscous at a game park?
I ate it on a paper plate on a windy day, so.
You just roll the plate up and just pour it down your throat?
Yeah, exactly. Like, me and the fanatics.
Okay.
No, it's I don't know how it's going to be served during the actual games, but it was a nice change to have. You know, it's I know it's going to be available at the premium suites.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And I think there was like a jerk chicken sandwich. Ooh, as well.
Yes.
I mean, it is interesting. It goes to the idea that one of the things that clearly they think will bring people to the ballpark is this gourmet food experience. So the baseball's there, but they clearly are betting on more expensive, higher quality food.
Yeah, I think they're trying to just diversify, you know, appeal to the widest amount of people.
Yeah, and it's not cheap. I know ballpark food isn't cheap, so, you know, do that. But yeah. I heard the existing grill stands are going to be changed to the 1883 Burger Co.
Right, yeah. So there's two stands, and they've been officially renamed to 1883 Burger Co. In honor of the year the Phillies were founded. And other than burgers, they'll also have chicken tenders, Phillies Franks, boardwalk fries. You know,
see, that's what we're used to.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That is Ali Mosen, Billy Penn's food and drink reporter. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY 90.9. Coming up next,
we're talking with SEPTA CEO and General Manager Leslie Richards. Get your questions in now. Our phone line is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org, and that's like the number 2. Lots to come.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You are listening to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Going to give you that number one more time to call us and participate in today's conversation. 888-477-9499. You can also email us, studio2@whyy.org. That's 2, like the number 2.
So yesterday, SEPTA released its budget proposal for the upcoming fiscal year, and it came with a warning. We're okay right now, but we won't be okay for long. This is the last year SEPTA can count on pandemic relief money from the federal government. Ridership is still down, and a fiscal cliff looms that is in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
And I want to say, whether you ride SEPTA or you don't, you should care about its future, because the health of a region is linked to the health of its transit system. And our system, like many, faces daunting challenges in the years ahead. The woman responsible for tackling those challenges, at least in part, is Leslie Richards, CEO and General Manager of SEPTA. Leslie Richards, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Glad to be here with you.
And I just want to mention again, this conversation will go by fast. If you've got questions for Leslie Richards, get them in now. You can call 888-477-9499. So, Leslie, I want to jump right in. At $1.7 billion, that's SEPTA's budget for the 2024 fiscal year. It's the largest in the authority's history. Where is that money going? And give us the main pockets of investment and the rationale behind it.
Sure. It is about 4.7% above the budget of last year. A lot of that increase is really tied to the impact of inflation that we're experiencing right now. As you already said, this is our last year right now. If nothing else changes, that we can guarantee no fare increases, no service cuts. It has investments in safety and security, the most that we've had. We've increased that over last year as well. And we're also using new technologies to improve our customer experience. We're accelerating hiring and training to address our vacancy levels like every other transit agency across the country. We have implemented our efficiency and accountability program, which we're very proud of. We asked our employees for ideas, and at every level at SEPTA, people came up with ways that we could reduce costs, where we could be better and more efficient in what we do. And we've already been able to identify over $30 million in savings, and this budget coming up will identify up to $100 million every single year. We also are very excited that we have some fare enhancements. For the first time ever, we have access to a second free transfer. When I first came here before the pandemic began, we were really excited to introduce the first free transfer, and we promised that that would just be the start. And now we are able to give the second free transfer, and we're also looking at how people can use the entire system easier and more seamless. And so for the first time ever as well, monthly and weekly pass holders will be able to use their passes on 24 inner ring regional rail stations. That's every zone one station throughout Philadelphia. And it also includes the airport line stations at every terminal and the center city stations, which includes Jefferson, Suburban, and William H. Gray 30th Street. It shows our shows our ongoing expansion of SEPTA Key Advantage. We now have over 30,000 employees in the Philadelphia area who get free transit as employee benefit through our SEPTA Key Advantage program, and we're expanding that to more employers. We have the largest private employer right now, Penn Medicine, as one of those employers, and Mayor Kenney, the city, who is the largest public employer. It's part of his budget, which would add another 30,000. So those are all good things.
This is not a good thing. You have put forward the prospect of service cuts and fare increases unless SEPTA receives additional support. So I'm going to ask you point blank.
Yes.
How much money do you need, and how soon do you need it to avoid those scenarios?
We're looking at the need to close in a budget gap of about $260 million. And we're talking right now to the state. We'll be talking to our local funders as well, which include the five counties that SEPTA serves. And we're looking at how do we raise money locally. And if we cannot figure out a way, also increased ridership will help us through fare box revenue. We're always looking at more advertising. We're always looking at other revenue options. We're looking at, you know, if we can make any other cuts here, but we feel like we have a good handle on that, and we're pleased where that's going. We're going to have to, you know, close in on between probably 250, 270 million every year moving forward.
And where will the service cuts come, do you think, if you cannot close that gap within the next year?
Look, we'll be looking at how people are using our system this year. It'll be very, you know, it'll be really important in our data gathering. We know people are using our system differently than they did 3 years ago. We know that teleworking is impacting us, how people commute, when they commute, how they use us. We're seeing more weekend needs. We're seeing travel throughout the day a little bit more than we used to, not just the peak times. And so we'll be taking a look at that and then obviously having to make some very difficult decisions if we can't find our way through some more revenue.
I want to jump in here and just talk about ridership because it's been down. It has not rebounded to pre-pandemic times. And you mentioned the shifting way that people use SEPTA. Is there a plan to sort of try to grow SEPTA ridership again, or is this the new reality? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Look, we are constantly looking at ridership. Right now, you know, the three things I focus on every single day, it's safety, security, ridership, growth. They start off all of our meetings. We discuss all three and what we can do, obviously, to make the system safer, more secure, so that people feel more comfortable being on the system. And then also what are the different ways we can grow our ridership? You know, we're looking at different incentives. We still offer free parking. We're looking at our routes. We're redoing all of our bus routes right now to make them more reliable, more frequent. We believe that will also increase ridership there. We're looking at, you know, our fare payments. How can we make it easier? We're working toward people being able to tap with their phones to pay, where they won't even need the SEPTA key card. It'll be extremely convenient. We already upgraded where people can buy several trips with just tapping their phone several times with SEPTA key ticks. So we're trying to make the system easier to use, more seamless to use. We're going through an entire wayfinding and branding system right now with SEPTA Metro. Starting in January of 2024, people will see new signs, and we took a look at Paris, London, New York, how they use letters, numbers, colors, shapes, so that people, when they get on the system, they clearly know where they're going. As you know, SEPTA is a very old system, and getting from one mode to the other, we're taking a look at every single sign and making sure that people understand where they need to go and they don't feel like they may get lost on the system. And so a lot of work's going on.
You talked about changing commuter patterns. Obviously, the nature of work has changed tremendously since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Is SEPTA looking at its regional rail schedules so that perhaps they are not as commuter-oriented and oriented towards those traditional peak times of the 9-to-5 worker? Will you consider reformatting those schedules?
Absolutely. So we're doing a project, Reimagining Regional Rail, that's doing exactly that. First of all, we want to make regional rail more accessible to all of our riders. And that's starting in this budget right now by making those inner ring regional rail stations, all Zone 1, Airport Line, and Center City stations available to our weekly and monthly Transpass users. Normally, they would only be able to use our buses, our trolleys, and our subways with that pass, but now they'll be able to use regional rail. So we're taking a look at how people use regional rail, when they use it. We're definitely seeing right now where we're running lower service on the weekends, in many cases hourly service. We're seeing in some areas where more frequency is being requested, and we're running through all that. And we also want to make sure that we're taking advantage of the second free transfer, because when you get two free transfers, you use our system differently. So we want to make sure that the buses are running to make those transfers effortless, and that our regional rail is also running to make those, you know, as we expand those transfers, how our system works and how people can jump from one mode to the other and use all of SEPTA.
And we are speaking with Leslie Richards, CEO and General Manager of SEPTA. You can call in with your questions. That number is 888-477-9000. 94.99. I want to bring in a question that we received in an email from Jacob in Northeast Philly. He says, what is SEPTA's current stance on moving forward with the long-anticipated Roosevelt Boulevard subway? He says, support for this project has grown massively, and with the end of the King of Prussia Rail project, this seems a perfect time to begin work.
Yeah, look, I would love to be in the position to be able to talk about expansion projects at SEPTA and feel good about how we can move them forward. But one of the main reasons we're not able to move forward on King of Prussia Rail is because we are not funded properly at this moment. We don't have enough money to put up for competitive federal grants, and that's where the majority of money in this new federal bill, which gives us, you know, allows for the largest investment in transit ever here in the United States. But we in southeastern Pennsylvania just are unable to compete because you have to put up local matches, often at 50% of the project. So for KOP Rail, which was around a $3 billion project estimated lately, we would have had to put up $1.5 billion. And our backlog is such that we couldn't pull from existing projects that need to be completed, such as the new rail cars on the Market Frankford line, such as our new trolley cars that will make all our trolley system 100% ADA accessible. We have a lot of state of good repair needs as well. And so while I really like the Roosevelt Boulevard project, I really like the King of Prussia Rail project as well, I really like the Navy Yard Subway Extension project, there are really good projects here. The funding is something that we really have to discuss. So we have to figure out how do we increase those local matches. That means investment in the local counties, more investment at the state as well. I believe the latest estimates on Roosevelt Boulevard, you know, are around somewhere between $8 and $10 billion right now, which means we would have to come up with $4 to $5 billion. You know, we were unable to come up with the 1.5 for King of Prussia Rail. So, you know, I really want to be clear. It has nothing to do with how valuable or how great we think the project would be. I am all for getting more people on transit. When you look at environmental issues alone, every transit rider, you know, uses 1/3 of the carbon emissions as someone who's traveling by vehicle. Every transit rider is 10 to 18 times safer than they are in a vehicle. There's so many good reasons to use transit. And, you know, I would love to say, you know, we'll build it. But large infrastructure projects are also very fragile. And one of the reasons they're fragile is because of the funding that you have to show up front. So I would love for the discussion to be, you know, how do we increase those local matches right now? And then I would love to talk about those projects.
We do have a lot of comments about the KOP project.
Sure.
But I want to zero in on something you said right there. So your understanding is that the federal government would not put up the money you needed because you all couldn't match, not because the folks of the federal government looked at the fundamentals of the project and said, we don't like this. We don't like the way this projects.
Yeah, you're rated in two ways. So there's the project rating, which we've been working with the federal government on, and then there's the fiscal rating. And so the fiscal rating is where we were directly asked, you know, which projects in your capital budget would you pull when inflation is increasing the cost of this project and when there may be other cost overruns, which is very likely in a large project. And we couldn't show it. So that was the stage where we were at. And we realized that we had to fix that before we could move forward.
Yeah. I want to jump in here and switch gears a little bit and talk about the issue of public safety, specifically violent crime on SEPTA. You know, we've seen an increase in violent crime since the pandemic. Last week, there were multiple shootings. I have a two-part question. First, what changes have been implemented that appear to be working, and what is coming to help tackle any challenges that remain?
Sure. Well, look, we've invested heavily in safety and security. So We are hiring new transit officers. In fact, we have our largest class in the academy right now of 21 officers, and we also have four officers from other local agencies joining us. So that'll be 25 new officers in the next few months. We're looking to recruit more. We've increased salaries of those officers as well. We've increased deployments, particularly around the Market Frankford line where that shooting occurred last week. And we're making sure that announcements from our operators, letting people know when police are on our vehicles and they're on vehicles throughout the day, and also making sure that people have our Transit Watch app. It's very important that they download the SEPTA Transit Watch app where they can report anything that makes them feel uncomfortable, and making sure that, you know, if they see anything that makes them feel unsafe or they want the police or our social service units, our mental health partners to take a look at, it gets reported, it goes straight to our transit police dispatch, and then we can respond appropriately. We're also have 30,000 cameras on our system, and we have a new virtual patrol center where they're monitored, and we look at hot spots constantly. And we're also looking at technology. We've talked about our Zero Eyes pilot program, which is being utilized in different school districts across the country, as well as in employers across the country. We're the first transit agency to take a look, and they're helping us identify danger spots throughout the system as well. So we're doing a lot of different things. We're happy that Part 1 crime has gone down on the system by 5%, and a lot of it is being helped by our own customers, our employees, you know, reporting through the Transit Watch app. When they see drugs, alcohol, smoking, people experiencing homelessness, again, we can have the appropriate response on the system.
So, but what is the appropriate response? Because you mentioned some of these violent incidents, which do get a lot of headlines. But the questions we're getting right now, I'm going to read a couple, are more about people asking about, I would say, more the day-to-day nuisance stuff. Karen from West Philly said, what can be done about people smoking weed or cigarettes on transit? None of the passengers can say anything. Annie, what is being done to address safety on the L specifically? I've cut back using it because there are so many people nodding off on the train, and it makes me nervous. So putting aside sort of incidents of violence, acute violence, what is the appropriate response for SEPTA when people observe that type of behavior on a train?
Right. The first thing we ask is that they report it through the app. Because please understand, there are hundreds of vehicles out at any one time, and our police force is slightly over 200. There are thousands of platforms. And so when we get a report through the app, we can quickly deploy attention to certain areas. I've been on vehicles when someone's reported on the app, someone's smoking. Two stops later, a police officer will get on and ask that person to stop immediately or be escorted off the system. So we really need to see, you know, to get those reports, and we need them in real time. So often I'll hear someone say, oh, I took, you know, I saw someone smoking in my car, and they tell me hours after it happened. And then it's not at a point where SEPTA can do anything about it. So that could be really helpful. And then we have these increased deployments as well, where we have police going up and down. It's the reporting and getting more attention and making our deployments, you know, giving them the priorities of where to go. And we will continue working on it. We know that these quality of life events make people feel uncomfortable. But I do want to remind everybody that less than 1% of the criminal activity that is going on in the Philadelphia region is happening on SEPTA. It is a very small percentage. I'm not saying, I mean, we're not happy until it's zero, but it gets talked about much more than 1% in the media. And so just want to remind people of that, but we are doing everything we can on that. And again, reporting it through the app is the one thing that can really help us so that we can make sure that our team is where they need to be at the right times.
Thank you. And we are speaking with Leslie Richards, CEO and General Manager of SEPTA. I want to throw in a couple more questions from our audience. Question from Ed, he says, how soon will passengers be able to pay their fare using their smartphone or their watch like in other cities in America and around the world?
Yeah, we're working on that right now. We're piloting that technology on our current fare system. We're also about to put out a new RFP for the next iteration of that system, which will include all of those abilities to pay with your phone and to pay directly by credit card as well. I assume, I don't know the exact answer to the watch question, but I assume that's tied into how you use your phone as well.
Yep.
And so we are working on it. We want to deliver it as soon as possible, but please understand we're connecting to a very old IT system on a legacy
that is
system.
And we would love to have you back, Leslie Richards, CEO and General Manager of SEPTA. We got to drop it there. Thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
So coming up, we are ready for our Studio 2 Trivia Challenge. Are you?
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause. And rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, hard transition.
Yes, we're going to start a little Thursday afternoon tradition here. We're calling it the Studio 2 Trivia Challenge. Very creative, but it's pretty self-explanatory. A listener will call in live and Avi is going to ask them a trivia question. If they get it correct, they get bragging rights and some WHYY swag. So today we have Jake from Philly on the line. Hi, Jake. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm great. So are you a sports... I'm assuming you're a sports fan, yes?
Yes.
What's your favorite team?
I would have to go with the Eagles.
All
no
right.
Birds.
Why did you assume he was a sports fan? You just assumed Jake from Philly's a sports fan?
I assumed, yeah. Okay. Philly, so he's winning already. So Avi going to take over right now.
You're an Eagles fan. Okay. So Jake, welcome to Studio 2 Trivia Challenge. Listen closely.
Thank you.
You are a brave soul, and I'm going to explain to you how this works.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you a question, Jake. If you get it right, you get a WHYY tote bag plus an additional piece of swag inside. However, if you want, after I ask the question, you can ask for multiple choice, and I'll give you four choices. If you ask for multiple choice, you only get the tote bag, not the additional swag inside. Understood?
Understood.
All right, Jake. So we talked earlier in the hour, and I know you were listening raptly about ballpark food. At Citizens Bank Park, there is a barbecue stand named after a former player. Which player is
man.
It? Now, you can answer straight up, or you can ask for the multiple choice.
Oh, man. I'm blanking.
I go for the multiple choice. Yeah.
I'm going to need the multiple choice.
All right.
And then I'll get it. But now I feel terrible.
Is it named after Ryan Howard, Richie Ashburn, John Kruk, or Greg Luzinski?
Ashburn Alley. Ashburn Alley.
Oh, he's so confident. But he's wrong.
Oh.
Jake, I'm so sorry. So Ashburn Alley is correct, but the barbecue stand is named after Greg Luzinski. Greg the Bull Luzinski. It's called Bull's BBQ. But
all right. I wasn't going to get that one anyway.
Jake, we appreciate you being our test subject for Studio 2 Trivia Challenge.
And, you know, you love the Eagles. We love the Eagles. So you're a winner in our book, even though you won't get the swag. Sorry.
All right. No swag for me.
Oh, wait. Our producers are saying, guess what? You're going to get the tote bag anyway.
All right.
Aww.
Aw, thank you for being our first
contestant. Everybody gets a trophy, right?
That's right. That was Jake from Philly. By the way, if you want to be in Jake's shoes in an upcoming week, try to beat me. All you have to do is call a number. It's 215-351-0525. I'll say that again. 215-351-0525 and leave a message with your information and our producers will get back to you.
Yes. And so every Thursday we'll have a brand new question. So now we're going to turn to WHYY's Tanya Pendleton, who has a fantastic list of things to do this weekend.
Good morning. Passover and Easter happen this week, so we want to acknowledge the holidays for those who celebrate. But over the years, Easter has also become a secular holiday, and this year, Philadelphia enjoys its 90th Easter promenade on Sunday.
In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills aparted, you'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade.
Get your best outfit together because the annual tradition will reward you for it. Every contestant in the best dress contest will receive a goodie bag of chocolate. Winners in the 9 categories from best dressed babies to best Easter bonnets will be awarded gift cards from various South Street businesses and eateries. Fox 29 hosts, including Alex Holly and Drew Anderson, along with local drag queen Brittany Murphy, will be on hand. The promenade starts at 5th and South at 12:30 p.m. The Phillies are back!
Hey, take me out to the ball game.
They're just off a season where they came up a little short in their quest for a championship, but we have high hopes for this year. Cheer them on Friday at their rescheduled home opener versus the Cincinnati Reds. The game was moved due to rain in the forecast, and tickets were limited but may now be available, or you can always buy from resellers. Things get started at 3:05 p.m., and if you happen to be sick that day, we won't tell anybody we saw you at the game. If you can't make the opener, the Reds are here Saturday and Sunday, too. We'll have all the ticket options on our website, whyy.org/things to do. Philadelphia has a rich sports history, but the city also boasts such a wonderful arts and culture history that several prominent artists called Philly home at one point.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child.
One of them was Paul Robeson. The activist, actor, athlete, and vocalist spent the last years of his life in Philadelphia. His 125th birthday celebration begins this week with a bus ride to his birthplace in Princeton on Saturday. On Sunday, another bus ride heads to Harlem for Easter services at the Robeson Family Church. After a panel discussion in Philadelphia, the week concludes with a gala fundraiser at the Annenberg next Saturday. Gina Belafonte, yes, that's Harry's daughter, will be a guest speaker. Tickets are available now for each of the events.
In my solitude, you haunt me.
Billie Holiday was born in Philadelphia and lived here for many years. Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill reimagines Billie's life through a fictionalized performance at a South Philly bar. Lawrence Lee stars as Lady Day. The immersive show opens tonight at the Suzanne Roberts Theater going through April 30th. Friday is National Beer Day. I don't think around these parts anyone needs a reason to drink more beer, but if you do, Two Locals Brewing is hosting a tasting at Co-op in University City. The city's only black-owned brewing company is releasing their Nubian Brown Ale ahead of their 6,000-foot brewery and tap room opening in the U City Square building later this year.
The Brown Ale, which we call Nubian, is a very special beer for us. We got second place at a homebrew competition. Technically, should have just been a tie, but it was on a coin flip that we didn't get first place. But we're champions in our book.
That was Mengistu Kulor, one of the two brothers that owns Two Locals Brewing. We're about to tap out on this week's edition of Things to Do, but we have to tell you one more thing. Mark Broussard is coming to Ardmore Music Hall on Friday. The Louisiana-based singer-songwriter's latest album, SOS 4, Blues for Your Soul, came out last month. He goes on at 8 p.m. I'm Tanya Pendleton. This has been Things to Do, and we'll be back next Thursday with more weekend options. If you missed anything or need more details, head to our website, whyy.org/things to do. Whatever you choose to do, have a great weekend, everyone.
Darling, I'm so glad that I found you. Oh, girl, I want my arms. I want my arms.
Well, I will say, Avi, after listening to Tanya, I feel like I'm in the know because I'm going to see that new Lady Day musical next week, and I'll be at the Paul Robeson Gala
Saturday.
I know. I feel like I'm in the know.
On the trends. On the trends.
Well, that is it for Studio 2 today. Thank you to everyone for all of your questions and comments this hour. For more of our show, you can head on over to whyy.org/studio2, and that's the number 2. And you can follow WHYY on Twitter. Our hashtag, of course, is Studio 2.
Our producers are Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. Our engineer is Diana Martinez. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for joining us.